vois danser les langues des beaux.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case, keep your eyes open and watch the road, and, you know, anyway.
How's your knee?
It's okay. I'm able to bear weight, so.
Sweet.
That's, significant, so. But turns out there was two foreign bodies, not just one, so. It was fortuitous that I had them go in and fix things.
No, they weren't foreign, they were just floating, right?
Well, they're called foreign bodies. It shouldn't be in there, so...
Oh, okay.
It's foreign to the area that it is in. The theory is that it is pieces of my own cartilage that have sloughed away and balled up. But they won't know until the biopsy, so...
Cool. So, what's your expected back to prime shape?
I will... my first physical therapy is Monday... and they will evaluate me then. But at this point, they're expecting no change in my range of motion. So there will be no inhibition. I wasn't prohibited in my range of motion before. So I don't see that changing. It just happens that randomly my knee would lock, and it would either lock in a straight position so I couldn't bend it, or it would lock in a not straight position so I couldn't straighten it. So
without these things in there, it shouldn't be a problem?
I can have my leg at any angle at will at any point I wish.
Cool.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Any angle that it should normally be at.
That's all we want.
Yeah.
So.
Isosceles. So anyway. So now the worst part was that we checked in at noon. I was actually there 15 minutes early, and then they didn't take me into the OR until 4.
Oh.
So you hadn't eaten since...
8 o'clock the night before.
Awesome.
So I was super unhappy and cranky and hangry. And and of course, I'm just sitting in a hospital gown in an uncomfortable bed for hours and hours and hours. So it was just very frustrating. Everybody was just talking about food in my presence. So, bastards. Anyway.
Anyway, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew, and we're not going to welcome you this week.
Welcome back, Brother Jay. Sorry, I'm all off. I'm about a half a bubble off plum tonight.
He was here last week too.
I was going to say.
Well, you never know when these things are going to be released. Well, I guess we are, yeah, because we don't have any more solo. Anyway, I don't know.
Okay.
Welcome to everyone except Brother Jay, because it's not special, it's just regular. Regular Brother Jay, regular Drew. Tonight we're having a regular podcast about a regular movie. Tonight's regular movie is Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, 2011. Drew, is this your movie?
I don't think so.
No, it's mine.
Oh, it's Jason's. Okay, all right. So you're going to be driving this boat.
Well, I never seen it before, so... I mean,
my God. Okay. All right.
Have you seen this before, Eric?
Yes, I had. I hadn't remembered it. I mean, I kind of remembered it, but I hadn't really had, it didn't make a big impression on me. I'm going to save my assessment after I ask. I guess we'll start with Brother Jay, since you're to blame. I mean, you're the person who gave this gift to us. What did you think of Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy?
This is a perfectly fine B movie, serviceable spycraft kind of Cold War kind of espionage movie. It was fine. It wasn't spectacular, but it kept my interest and kept moving. I I didn't dislike it. It had a lot of amazing actor talent in it, so I felt the story moved along. I wasn't bored. So I thought it was pretty good.
Brother Drew?
I had a completely different reaction watching it this time. The first time I watched it, when it first came to video, what, 5 years ago, probably? 6 years ago? I thought it was super slow, super boring, and I had a hard time following the plot. This time around, I really dug the mood and atmosphere. I really liked Gary Oldman's understated performance quite a bit. I appreciated it way more than I did the first time. And I was amazed at how many people were in this movie that I had not recognized the first time I watched it that are now just bona fide movie stars. And I ended up really liking this. I still didn't really follow the plot all that well, like all the spycraft machinations. But I dug this movie way more than I expected to. And it's good to see John Hurt again.
Yeah, I agree. The cast is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Colin Firth and Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Hardy.
Toby Jones?
Ciara and what's his face?
Hines.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy? I mean,
yeah.
Tom Hardy? Almost unrecognizable.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. I was a little confused in the beginning because it was all the jumping back and forth. I had a hard time trying to, it took me a while to, or of course, I mean, full disclosure, you know, stoned on opiates this week. So watching this movie stoned, I was like trying to keep track of what time zone I was in, let alone what part of the movie I was in. So it was a little challenging, but after a while I got into the flow of when they would jump back and forth.
Well, I had a different experience than Drew. The first time I watched it, I thought it was a little slow. I think I watched it with our mom. I think it was winter time, or it was a time where it was just a nice time to be snuggled up watching a movie. And this time when I watched it, because it's summertime, and maybe because I've been pretty busy at work and pretty busy with stuff at home, so I wasn't maybe in the best mood when I tried to watch this movie three times and fell asleep each time, because I found this movie really gorgeous, gorgeous shades of brown. And I thought the music probably hit home if you lived in England in 1973 or whatever. But I was bored to tears. It was so slow. It was killing me. And everybody did a great performance. Everybody was very understated. But this movie had no action, so I thought the pace was glacial.
I thought the music was kind of reminiscent of Ghost Rider. It had some of that element to it.
Yeah, maybe.
And I thought there was some action. There was some tension.
There was tension. The movie was full of tension.
It was a lot of tension.
You know, Benedict Cumberbatch was doing some good spy craft, getting documents out. That was some good action.
Yeah. The opening action scene I didn't like. It turned me off. It was too weird.
I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, I thought the good visuals. I mean, you got a kind of an inside look of what the circus was like.
In Budapest.
Yeah, I like that because you sort of got like a POV shot of what it's like to be like a good spy and start to recognize things around you that are a little bit off.
But it was like he walked onto a movie set with everybody on the entire block was involved in this operation.
Well, but most of those Eastern Bloc countries at those point in time were probably fairly regimented.
And that's probably what it felt like. Like everybody was there to be an adversary for him.
Okay. Maybe it's because this movie, maybe this movie just wasn't for me at this time in my life.
Possible.
I think it's funny that it sounds like, if I'm interpreting what you're saying and comparing it to what I felt, it sounds like this movie subverted both of our expectations, and we just had opposite expectations.
I mean, I didn't expect this to be a James Bond movie. I didn't expect this to be Jason Bourne. I guess I just wasn't in the mood for a thriller where the main character is like 104 years old.
I would not call this a thriller.
Well, I mean, it's from the master of the spy novel, John le Carré, right?
Jean le Carré, The Russia House.
This felt more like a plotting mystery.
Well, and that's the thing. BBC made some kind of like a 9-hour documentary. Yeah, the BBC did some big long miniseries in the 70s. Where, you know, I guess, you know, boiling down a very, very complicated novel into 2 hours is difficult under the best of circumstances. And so I think people who had read the novel really liked this movie because they knew where all the plots were, you know, the plot twists were. And people who had seen the miniseries compared it probably unfavorably because you didn't have as much time to get to know each individual character, because there are a lot of characters in this movie.
Yeah, it was a big cast.
I mean, again, for a movie where almost nothing happens, it's got a lot of moving parts to it. The plot moves around a lot, which is why I think it's so confusing. Or it's not that nothing happens, it's nothing happens on screen.
Nothing overt happens.
Yeah, I suppose.
Sort of the point.
Yeah.
This would have been a great stage play.
I don't know. I probably would have had an even harder time following that.
I guess because I don't have any nostalgia for the time period and the place, I wasn't captivated in that way. So I just kind of kept thinking, huh, I wonder if they're going to get on. Gee, okay, now I remember this happening. So what's going to happen here? Okay, now here's something. They're just going to sit around and look pensive at each other. And there's some swimming by an old guy.
I remember being really frustrated the first time I watched this because I could not follow how Smiley was connecting all the dots. And that it really bothered me. But for some reason, this time around, I still had that same problem. Maybe I followed a little bit better because I had a little memory of what to expect, but I still had a hard time figuring out how Smiley was connecting all the dots. But the ride for me this time was way more enjoyable.
Well, Smiley is a character, is like, has a long history of being a character. And they've done radio plays. There's a series of some Smiley books. So he's a thing. Is there like a young Smiley? Can they do a Smiley reboot? A gritty Smiley reboot?
He was the character in The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, right?
I do not know. What were the Smiley books? If We Had a Machine.
Wow, there is a lot.
And don't get me wrong, I don't think this was a poorly made movie. I just think it wasn't really my style or what I wanted to see at this time.
So the Smiley novels are Call for the Dead, 61, A Murder of Quality, 62. The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, 63. The Looking Glass War, 65. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, 74. The Honorable Schoolboy, 77. Smiley's People, 79. The Secret Pilgrim, 90. A Legacy of Spies, 2017.
Wow.
It was like posthumous or something?
When did Le Carré die? I don't know. Oh, he's not dead. So not so
but was Smiley dead in the last book? Have you read any of anything by Le Carre?
Uh-uh.
I haven't either.
I attempted to read... was it... Did he write The Russia House? Is that... Am I...
I don't know. I have The Spy Who Came In From the Cold in my camping stuff to read, but I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, he wrote The Russia House, Jean Le Carre. I tried to read The Russia House because it came out as a movie when I was working at the movie theater, and I would eschew movies like that and opt for the book and couldn't get... It was seemingly impenetrable. So I never went back to it. By the way, Jean Le Carre is still alive, Brother Eric.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But we think Smiley was dead in the last three Smiley books.
Shall we get into the plot?
Sure. Yes, we should.
Okay. This is straight from the plot synopsis and IMDb.
Oh, wait, how long is the IMDb plot synopsis?
It's not as long as you might think. Oh, yeah, okay. It's a couple pages, but it's we've had longer plot synopsises.
Okay.
Because this movie was 2 hours 27, right?
Well, over the course of 3 days, it was...
This feels like it could be a 5,000-word synopsis.
Okay, well, we'll see. In October 1973, Control, John Hurt, the head of British intelligence, the Circus, sends Agent Jim Prideaux, Mark Strong, to Budapest in communist Hungary to meet a Hungarian general who had promised to deliver valuable information regarding a mole in British intelligence. However, Prideaux is shot and captured by Soviet agents. Amid the international incident that follows, Control and his right-hand man, George Smiley, Gary Oldman, are forced into retirement. Control, already ill, dies soon afterward. Now, again, there are many, many paragraphs like this, and that really doesn't encapsulate what happens in the. I mean, it tells what happens in the movie, but again, it's very stylish.
Yeah, I love the credits. I love how there's no dialogue to show what's going on with Control and more importantly, Smiley. But it really sets the mood. That was not something I'd remembered from my first viewing. But I really liked how it started out.
Yeah, Smiley doesn't even talk for the first however many minutes, right?
Felt like a half an hour.
Yeah.
And he doesn't talk much throughout the movie.
No, not really.
He's a lot of facial expressions and affects and kind of mannerisms.
Maybe we should. Can we call George Smiley an in-action hero?
Sure. What I really liked about Gary Oldman's performance in this movie was that I thought he did a really good job of portraying this stoic persona, but still able to convey that the wheels were always spinning, even if he was nearly expressionless. And that seems like a really difficult task as an actor. And I thought it was really well done.
Oh yeah, no doubt he is an excellent actor. But as we see, there are lots of excellent actors in this movie. We have the character Percy Alleline, played by Toby Jones, best known as portraying Truman Capote in that other Capote movie. I can't see him as anybody but Truman Capote, by the way. He becomes the new chief of Circus with Bill Hayden, Colin Firth, who is Bridget Jones' Diary. Well, and a whole bunch of other things, probably, but...
The King's Speech.
Yeah.
No, it's just Bridget Jones' Diary.
And his deputy, or sorry, Bill Hayden, Colin Firth is his deputy, and Roy Bland, Ciaran Hines, and Toby Esterhaus, David Densick, as the close allies. They previously began a secretive operation called Witchcraft, which was obtaining purportedly valuable Soviet intelligence. Control and Smiley mistrust the material produced by Witchcraft and are dismayed that Percy is unwilling to share the identity of the source. The witchcraft intelligence is important enough that Percy is able to persuade the United States to renew exchanging their intelligence with the British, which they had stopped due to prior British intelligence failures. So Percy and Hayden meet with Oliver Lacan, played by Simon McBurney. He's the vice minister in charge of intelligence, and persuade him to rent a safe house from restricted funds outside of the normal MI6 budget. Now, Lacan is then contacted by Ricky Tarr, Tom Hardy, an MI6 operative thought to have defected, who claims there is a long-term mole in a senior position within British intelligence. Lacan secretly persuades Smiley to conduct a private investigation into Tarr's claims, a suspicion that Control also held before he was sacked.
And this is the first time Smiley actually speaks.
Yes.
Doesn't he say, like, you fired me, or I'm retired?
Yes. Yeah, because during that big last meeting that Control, John Hurt Control, had, he did all the talking. And Smiley just kind of walked along with him out the door. So Smiley recruits Peter Gilliam, Benedict Cumberbatch, and a retired special branch officer, Mendel, played by Roger Lloyd Pack, to help him with his investigation. He begins interviewing people who left Circus about the same time that he and Control were forced out. And I did like these parts of it. I mean, it was interesting to hear basically all these old people talk about what things used to be like. Maybe as I become an old person, I can identify with that more. I don't know. I'm like, wow, someday I'll be... Connie Sachs, Kathy Burke, was sacked by Alanine after she showed him research that led her to conclude that Polyakov?
The Russian dude,
Alexei, a cultural attaché in London, was actually a high-value Soviet spy, or spy handler. Another is Jerry Westerby, played by Stephen Graham, who had been duty clerk the night that Prideaux was shot. Westerby says that on the night he had called Smiley's house for instructions, Anne, who is played by Katrina Vasileva, and his Smiley's philandering wife answered the phone. Smiley was still in Europe. Shortly after,
I don't remember ever seeing Anne.
His wife?
Yeah.
She was at the Christmas party. Or the party. Because he saw her, Smiley saw her in the bushes making out with Colin Firth.
I did not catch that at all. Maybe I fell asleep.
Because he was looking out in the courtyard and they were there and he was hurt and upset and had that betrayed, as you do, that betrayed spouse look.
I assume that looked like all of his other looks.
Exactly. I was going to say that's pretty much a variant of the regular Smiley look.
He looked.
No,
effective.
He pulled it off. I grant him all of that. All of his little looks, his non-speaking roles and them kind of lingering the camera on him was effective.
Yeah. He was really, his expressions were amazing. For the lack of dialogue, he really accomplished a lot.
So shortly afterward, Hayden arrived at the circus and said that he saw the news of Prideaux's death on the ticker tape at his club. A lie. So Smiley realizes Hayden must have heard the news from Anne, confirming his suspicion that the two had been having an affair. So Smiley comes home and finds Tarr hiding there. And Tarr tells him, this is another thing, this movie is kind of a dark movie. It's darkly lit. And maybe the lack of flashing lights and like sunny days also led to my falling asleep. But so Tarr tells him that he'd been sent to Istanbul to investigate a Soviet agent named Boris. And Tarr found out that Boris really wasn't significant at all, but that Boris's wife, Irina, was an operative who seemed to have information. So Tarr overstayed his itinerary and initiated an affair with her to gain her trust. Irina knew who Tarr was and asked to trade information, specifically the name of the mole who existed in the top ranks of Circus and who worked for a KGB spymaster named Carla. She wanted to trade that for a new life in the West. Tarr sends her request back to London, but the reply is delayed several hours. And when it finally arrives, it ignores the offer of important intelligence. So Tara is instead told to return to Britain immediately. And he learns that Irina's husband, Boris, has been murdered and finds the British station chief in Istanbul also murdered.
Ostensibly framing him.
Yes.
Right?
So he desperately looks for Irina, finally finds her on a gurney being loaded onto a Soviet ship.
Does he find her? I don't think he does. He just finds out later.
Well, yeah, there's that. I mean, again, I'm reading from the synopsis here, but I may have nodded off during that point.
Yeah, I don't think he was aware. He found out that she was exfiltrated to Odessa, but I don't think he sees her.
So he goes into hiding because he is being framed for the murder. Now, Gillum is sent by Smiley to steal the circus logbook for the night that Tar called and finds that the pages have been cut out.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, this is that kind of movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the big reveal is it's not there.
Yeah. So, Prideaux, who's now working, he secretly was returned by the Russians, but he was sacked by the service, is now in hiding, working as a language teacher at a boys' school. He's kind of a creepy teacher, but maybe boys' schools are creepy places.
No, he was way too good at killing that owl.
Well, yeah. Was it an owl or was it just...
It was an owl. Okay. It was pretty disturbing.
Because the owl was on fire, right?
Yeah, it came down from the chimney, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is some action for you.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. A little bit of CG, too.
Yeah.
So, he reveals to Smiley that the purpose of the Hungary mission was to get the name of the mole. And Control had codenamed the suspects Tinker, who was Alleline, Toby Jones, Taylor, Hayden, Colin Firth, Soldier, who was Bland, Ciarán Hinds, Poor Man, who was Esther House, David Densick, and Beggar Man, who is Smiley. And then faces are taped onto chess pieces.
Yeah. I mean, wait, how would you do it? Yarn wall?
That's true. I don't know. I don't know what I would do.
Crazy murder corkboard?
Yeah, maybe there would be yarn involved. But I'm an American. What can I do?
Maybe a stained glass mosaic?
Maybe.
Oh.
So, well, I'm behind on my stained glasses. Yeah. Anyway. So Prideaux tells this horrible story about him being interrogated and that Carla, this mysterious bad guy, I guess Carla is a recurring character in the Smiley universe. He's the big bad guy behind the scenes.
He felt like it was a character who would appear in several books.
Yes. So Prideaux survives his interrogation without giving up the info.
No, he gives up everything.
Yeah.
He gives up everything?
Yeah, everything. He says he gives up everything.
Okay.
He tried to hold out long enough to let all of his network escape.
And turns out they didn't.
Yes. Anyway, turns out he finds out that this was all kind of for naught anyway, because not only did his, nobody escaped, but also they knew who the mole was. They just wanted to know how far the British investigation had gotten into finding the mole, right?
Well, oh, of course they knew who the mole was. It was their mole. But Prideaux was trying to keep it a secret that they were on to the fact that there was a mole there. And that was what he was surprised, is that they knew that Control thought there was a mole. They just wanted to find out how far along he'd gotten in figuring out who it was.
This is where Smiley learns that all the characters have been regularly meeting with the Russian guy, who is the source named Witchcraft, at this safe house. And at every meeting, the Russian guy gives them this supposedly high-grade intelligence information in exchange for low-grade British material, just to kind of keep it all going. But one of the members turns out is giving up high-grade information.
The mole, right?
The mole is
using these meetings to instead pass along big secrets.
Yes. And the Russians are getting the big secrets, but also passing on enough little stuff that they hope the British then can entice the Americans into giving up information, sharing the information with the British, kind of to display the fact that, that the British are doing a good job with intelligence, as based by all this information they're getting. And that will give them a big bunch of information that the mole then could give to the Russians. So it is a chess game.
Yeah. I followed barely any of that while I was watching the movie.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
And they murder Irina,
yes,
right?
Yes, in front of him.
Purdue. Which is never revealed to... I just forgot his name.
Smiley?
No, to Hardy. The Tom Hardy's character.
Well, I don't think they know. There was nobody involved in... It was only the audience who could connect all the dots, right?
That's true. Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. Yeah, because none of the characters Purdue really knew. Yeah.
Purdue didn't know Irina. Smiley didn't know who Purdue would have been describing.
That was a pretty shocking twist.
Oh, yeah. It explains how affected this guy was. Because he comes back and he's physically... you know, he had a physical toll of abuse and also the torment.
Yeah. Do you know her? No? Good. Bam.
Yeah.
that's some Americans level shit right there.
Well, actually, it's more like German level shit. Or maybe just Russian level. I don't know. Who knows who the good bad guys are? It's hard to tell.
Did you? Have you finished The Americans?
Uh-uh.
Holy crap.
Yeah, we're going to start the last season pretty shortly.
I know nothing about anything, but I've heard everybody loves how it ends.
Have you finished it?
Yes, I finished it this weekend. There were tears.
They say it's not a Sopranos ending.
No.
Good, excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
Did you see there's a Sicario 2 coming out?
There's a what?
Sicario 2.
We talked about it before.
Oh, Day of the Soldado?
Yes.
Yeah, because he's also doing... he's the dude who's doing Dune, right?
Oh, okay, maybe we didn't talk about it. I haven't had a lot of sleep, except for watching movies this week.
We couldn't tell what with your inability to speak.
Yes. Speak and think.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
It does. It does. It looks so the trailer terrible. Looks horrible.
Yeah.
For such a good movie, the first one.
I don't think anybody involved in the first one is involved in the second one, except for James Brolin and Benicio del Toro.
Maybe,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is just a paycheck?
It looks like it.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It looks like Good Will Hunting 2 hunting season.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, maybe it looks like Mamma Mia 2. Here we go again. So Smiley sets up his big trap at the end. He tells Tar to go to the Paris office where he forces them to send a cable that states that Tar knows who the mole is and is ready to give the name. And he finds out where the safe house is. So when the mole learns it, he's going to arrange to meet the Russian guy at the safe house so that they're going to ask him to kill Tar. But Smiley waits at the safe house and captures him. And it's Mr. Darcy. Or no. Is he Mr. Darcy? Is he the other guy? I don't know. He's Colin Firth.
Yeah, I think he was. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's who he was in Bridget Jones' Diary, right?
Yeah, I think so. I forget. I don't know enough about...
Hayden. Bill Hayden.
No. I don't know enough. Who's the other character in the Jane Austen book? Pride and Prejudice, I think.
Oh.
Mr. Darcy and what was the other guy?
Oh, the guy who ran off with the sister?
The Hugh Grant character.
Pride and Prejudice?
Well, isn't Colin Firth Mr. Darcy in Bridget Jones' Diary? And Hugh Grant is the other Pride and Prejudice character because Bridget Jones' Diary is Pride and Prejudice?
No, I don't know.
I don't know either. Anyway. So, the interrogation center, Hayden reveals...
Mr. Bingley?
I don't know. Hayden reveals that he seduced Smiley's wife on Carla's orders. So that way, Carla is the big bad guy. He's the, now I can't even think of his... He is Blofeld.
Yes.
To Smiley's Bond.
Yeah.
So yeah, so he was given orders to sleep with Smiley's wife to distract Smiley from any suspicions he have about him. So if you hate him for sleeping with your wife, you won't think he's the mole. So there's some confessions going on, and then Circus makes a plan for to exchange Hayden back to the Soviets, and Prideaux finds out that Colin Firth has been was responsible for all of his trauma. So he kills him.
And were they an item?
Were who an item?
Prideaux and Colin Firth.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't get that impression, but I don't know. Did you get that impression, Brother Jay?
I didn't, but I was also distracted by the kind of the red herring Benedict Cumberbatch breaking up with his boyfriend.
What? When did that happen?
Towards the beginning of the movie when he first starts getting him involved. Not control.
When Smiley gets him involved.
When Smiley gets him involved, he says, they're going to be watching you now, so make sure everything's fine. He goes back to his apartment and the guy is at the table writing notes and doing financials. This is all be done in a minute. And the next scene is him throwing down the keys on the table in front of Benedict Cumberbatch. He says, if there's somebody else, you could just tell me. And then he leaves. And then Mr. Cumberbatch starts crying. So,
oh, I'm so dumb. I thought that was his dad.
Okay. I'm not the only one who fell asleep during this movie.
No, his dad wouldn't have been a scandal.
His dad wouldn't have been. Was it some other son? You could have told me. Just tell me.
Yeah, no, I was was having a hard time figuring out why everybody's doing what they're doing.
So. Well, and that is true. They don't explain a lot of what's going on, although you see a lot of what's going on, which is, again, maybe it's because I'm dumb. Maybe it's because I want something to be spoon-fed to me. Maybe this movie was too smart for me.
Or maybe perhaps the movie makers and the screenplay adapters assumed that people who came to this movie would have a certain familiarity with the books.
Maybe. And, you know, again, that there's a lot of atmosphere in this movie. So maybe if you love these characters and you knew all the backstory because you were invested already, then you could really enjoy moments like that.
Well, now that I know there's a series of books, I'm tempted to go, you know, since I finished my Dune saga.
Oh, was the Dune saga? You finished all the Dune books?
I finished all of the Dune.
The Herbert. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you enjoy it? Like, if you summed up the Dune thing, the Dune thing, you liked it?
Yeah, I did. But we've established I have a weakness and soft spot for Dune in a way that doesn't make any rational sense.
Yeah, so. That's okay. Again, this is all about our experiences, right?
Oh, yes.
Everything is existential, so we're not here to judge what is good and what is bad. We're just here to say whether we like something or didn't.
To hell with that. I'm totally judging.
Although I directed Drew earlier off air, and I will direct everyone on air to go read Rex Reed's review of the movie Hotel Artemis. I would liken it to that review that New York food reviewer did on Guy Fieri's restaurant in Times Square. Except Rex Reed's is more brutal.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's so bad I felt bad for the filmmakers.
Pretty savage, huh?
Oh, it is the most savage.
Oh, nice.
So, anything else on Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy?
I don't really have anything else. I mean, it's a visual movie. It's a visual movie. Boy, that was deep. It's such a rich cinematic experience, and there isn't a lot of dialogue. It's a lot more understated, so it's hard to discuss it because large parts of the movie don't have pieces of intricate dialogue to kind of digest. And
well, believe it or not, maybe listening, maybe I'm not the best delivery device for this, but maybe listening to the plot summary might help people who haven't seen this movie enjoy the movie more.
I should have done that before I watched the movie.
I'm looking forward to going back and rewatching it, actually. So,
okay, cool. So what grade would you give it?
I'd give it a B plus.
Brother Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah. I mean, I not only didn't follow it, but completely misunderstood some of the scenes, and I still like this movie quite a bit. Yeah. I thought the performances were really good. And if you're, maybe I was just in the mood for like a kind of, methodical spy mystery movie. And if you are in the mood for that, this really fits the bill, because it is dense. It does not spoon feed you. And, it's just full of tension and paranoia and mystery. And, I definitely think it's worth it. And to see all these great, actors at different stages in their career is also really interesting.
Oh yeah. No, I believe this would be considered a shite ton of, fantastic British actors. I'm sure people don't say that over there. It's, Dougie will have to tell us, but I don't think so. I think that's it. I think I was not in the right mood to watch this movie, because this is a movie you can't watch if you're distracted in the least.
Yeah, you got to pay attention to this one.
Yeah, and my big distraction happened to be the Sandman, but still, you know, I would not recommend you put this movie on and then like fold laundry or something. Although Drew probably did, actually.
I did.
Yeah, of course. It's okay. Hey, somebody's got to fold the laundry.
Hey, I was stoned and I made it through.
Yeah, no, that's a deal. So, I will. We've already talked about we kind of alluded to the reason why Brother Jay was stoned, but it's because you had knee surgery.
I did. I had full on. Arthroscopic knee surgery,
where they took two foreign bodies.
Yes,
out of your
out
knee,
out of my knee, and cleaned up my meniscus.
Ah, so now your meniscus is shiny. Bing.
It is. It is smooth as a baby's bottom or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
The funny / odd / bizarre thing is, at no point did I speak with my surgeon at all during the process yesterday. Jesse talked to her as I came out of recovery, but I never saw her before, or after. And if I saw her during, I don't remember, because I was full of, Versed. So I don't remember any of that. But anyway, I do like my surgeon very much. I was up and walking, I was up and walking out of the hospital. So
now, did they put you completely out?
Oh yes.
Okay. So how did you deal with that as far as like breathing and whatnot? You're fine.
No problems.
Excellent.
It's not my first surgery. I mean, this is my third major surgery. I've had my knee was done a couple years ago. Then I had my tonsils out. Which was much more invasive and breathing intensive. But this was, they didn't even have to intubate me this time.
Oh, cool.
So, because I was really, I was able to breathe on my own. And without the tonsil problems, my breathing is so much better that they, the anesthesiologist said that they would try to avoid as much as they could intubating me and just make sure that I was breathing okay. And turns out I was just fine. So
I wonder, could they do that surgery with just local anesthetic?
No.
That would always be my preference.
There's too much going on, and there's the potential that you would, even with a nerve block, that you could move. And so you have to, I'm sure I was strapped in place pretty well, because they go in with two scopes, so there's two ports,
and they blow up your knee with air and stuff.
I don't know what they do, but whatever they do, it's really intricate and delicate and tiny little tools. And so you're talking fractions of, you know, fractions of measurements where the slightest of movement, you're cleaning up a meniscus. You might damage a meniscus and then it's a whole new knee. So I imagine they want you out pretty immobile, but no, it hurt, but they gave me pain pills and I was fine, and, you know, I got ice packs, and I got medication, and I got a week off, so.
Sweet. So what's the weather like during your week off?
60s, 70s.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, it's going to get into the 80s a little bit, but mostly 60s and 70s. So last night after we got home, we came home, and I got situated on the couch. And then we had my ritual. Whenever I have a major, like, full-on huge event, like when I had my wisdom teeth out or when I had surgery last time, not counting the tonsillectomy, but I have this thing where we will get McDonald's because I don't eat McDonald's often. So we will get McDonald's as kind of a treat to myself. So I get a fillet of fish. And last night I had a quarter pounder, which I haven't had in like 30 years. And I guess they're making them fresh now here, like with fresh ground beef, as opposed to frozen patties. And I gotta say, I'm sure it was because I hadn't eaten in like 20 hours, but
yeah,
good God, it was good. So.
Oh, excellent. That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
There's something special about McDonald's fries.
Well, yeah, I had a thing of French fries. I had a quarter pounder with cheese, and then I had two fillet of fish, which I didn't end up eating the fish. I wanted the fillet of fish. That's really what I go for.
So you had the McPresidential meal.
Is that what that is?
I think that's what our president eats quite a bit. Or maybe he eats a Big Mac and a fillet of fish.
Jesse made what did he call it?
Oh, he didn't do stacking, did he?
He called it like a McChick Dick or something. It was like a burger.
Some stories we don't want to hear.
Benedict Cumberbatch was telling his boyfriend to leave. He had a chicken sandwich and a cheeseburger, and he put the chicken sandwich in the cheeseburger. That's what he said. He had some ingenious name for it, and I don't know what it was, but it sounded horrific to me. I was like, no, I'm good.
There's the mythical off-menu thing, get the land, sea, and air, where you get a quarter pounder patty and a fish fillet and a McChicken together. Sounds ridiculous, but oh well.
Well, hey, you know, anything that drums up publicity.
Oh, yeah.
Locally here in Portland, there's a restaurant down the street, fast food, that was a Kentucky Fried Chicken for as long as I lived here. And then about 4 years ago, it closed, turned into a Taco Time, which is kind of a upscale Taco Bell. It's kind of a better food, better quality food, more expensive, of course.
They used to have one of those in Sitka.
Taco Time?
Yeah.
Oh, so good. I really dig Taco Time. Cause they have crispy bean burritos and crispy beef burritos, and they're just these rolled up tortillas that are filling in the center and they're deep fried.
Oh yeah, cafeteria burritos.
Oh, sorry, not Sitka. They used to have one near the Seattle airport.
Oh, so good. So good. So anyway, it's now turning into some burger joint, which I'm not familiar with the logo. So it just looks like a stacked burger, and it's super colorful. And it has this like blue flag, like if you know how the French's red flag for French's mustard is, instead of the red flag, it's the blue flag. I don't know what it means. So, and there's a Burger King right across the street because Jesse and boyfriend Jesse and roommate Derek were like, oh, it's Burger King. I'm like, there's a Burger King literally across the street. There's no way it's a Burger King. So I'm curious as to what chain it might be. So if anybody out there has any ideas on burger joints, let me know.
By the way, this Hotel Artemis review is savage.
Isn't it? I'm telling you, you need to, I'll put a link to it in the notes, because it is.
I will have to look.
There's a lot going on. The first paragraph, that's all I've read. It is amazing. The title of it is What Made Jodie Foster Agree to Star in the Worst Movie of the Year?
Wow.
And even the header on the tab in my browser, even the header is Total Garbage, Hotel Artemis.
Yes. Okay. I think if you look up Blue Moon Burgers, and I think the thing I'm looking at with the blue flag on it is the Impossible Burger. Have you heard about the Impossible Burger?
No.
It's a plant-based burger that tastes exactly like a regular burger. It bleeds and whatnot.
Ew.
People love it. Again, I don't, you know, I've never had one.
What does it bleed?
It bleeds plants. I don't know.
And what's it made out of?
Again, it's a mystery. It's impossible. I think in some store, maybe in like Whole Foods or something, you can buy Impossible Patties. I don't know. It's a whole thing for investigation, and it could not be the blue flag you're looking at. I don't know.
No, it's not. They also have regular burgers at Blue Moon, by the way.
Yeah, well.
And apparently the owner had a racist rant on his Twitter feed.
Oh, fuck that guy. Oh, okay. Housekeeping. I have a story to tell.
Housekeeping.
It's a surreal story. We've been doing like a tour of local parks, and we just went to the South Anchorage Sport Park that has, I think, Drew, have your kids been there with the gigantic pyramid shaped rope climbing thing that's like 30 feet tall?
Yeah, not much else.
Yeah, there's a couple roly slides, and we went there. It was a beautiful day. They have a little pavilion there with a like an area you can rent the pavilion or whatever, and then you can or gazebo, whatever it is. It's just a covered area, and there's a place where you can put like a charcoal barbecue.
Okay.
And so, and that was all in full swing. We got there and it was pretty warm day. It was last Sunday and it was pretty, well, it wasn't super warm, but it was super sunny. So Journey was out playing. It was fine. And, she's not big on the climbing part of it, but she was having fun with the rolly slide thing. And there's this thing that kids get inside and you spin and whatever. So it's pretty busy.
We were there last Sunday.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you part of the big churchy group?
No.
Okay.
We were there pretty early.
Was the large churchy group there?
No.
Okay. Because they were like 36 adults, I think, and a bunch of kids. And they had like the entire, like, you know, like your typical cookout spread there. And it was all like, it was already going on, lots of chairs and stuff. And I think it turned out to be, we figured out that it was probably a combination birthday party and maybe a, or a gender reveal party. I don't know.
Oh, you know what? We were not there last Sunday. We were there on Memorial Day, Monday.
So we found a bench to sit on. Kelly and I did next to the gazebo area. So because there's not really a lot of seating otherwise. And so we were camping on the bench and we're just kind of talking, but kind of looking at where the kids are playing. And so we're talking to each other, but we're kind of both staring off into the distance. And so this guy comes up to me, and I think of him as an old guy, but upon reflection, he may not have been much older than I am, but he approached me like an old guy, and he comes up to me and says, you got to keep the kids, you got to keep an eye on this, on the fire here, on the barbecue, because you got to keep kids away. If kids are running around, they could just knock over the fire, and they could get hurt. I'm like, okay. And then I go back to looking off in the distance. He's like, no, I'm serious. You need to keep an eye. If their kids even get next to this fire, you need to stop them, because all it would take is one kid to go over there and knock this thing over, and you could have some serious problems. I'm like, okay. And then he's like, yeah. And then he walks off. And I'm like, I turn to Kelly. I'm like, why did he deputize me to be like his fire? And I was actually thinking the words while he was saying, like, why are we having this conversation? But I didn't. I'm like, okay. All right, go away, crazy person. So then turns out he did. He and all the adults just emptied this gazebo, went out in the parking lot, which is up over a little hill. He abandoned his fire to me.
Wait, and, like left? Or
no, what, like
they
left.
Went on a and, smoke break or something?
No. Well, yeah, it turns out it was a lot of smoke. They left and there were, I heard singing, and then there was some sort of clapping, and this big plume of smoke came up, and we thought it was going to turn either blue or pink to denote a baby thing, but it was just white smoke. So Kelly, I turned to Kelly, I'm like, maybe there's a new pope. But I mean, they were gone for probably 10 minutes, completely leaving everything unattended.
Wow.
And then when he came back, everybody starts filing back, and I'm looking for this guy. I'm like, okay, because now I'm on fire fucking patrol until this guy comes back to take over his duty. So, and then Kelly and I were laughing about it because this little kid came up and like made himself a hot dog and stuff. Like not from the fire part of it. He like made himself a hot dog from the table part of it. Cause I was going to tackle him if he got close to the grill. And Kelly's like, I don't think he's part of their party. I'm like, good for him. If he's just going to go and take food, that's great. And he went over and took like a hot dog to this lady who was sitting across. I'm like, oh, she's not part of the party either. She sent him to go get a food for her. It's awesome. I love it. I love this kid. Maybe they have some brownies. I'll go over there myself. I want some macaroni salad, as it turns out. So they all came back.
You did work. You earned some food.
I know. I thought the same thing. There's no reason why I couldn't have cut the cake. I don't care, right? It was there. So they all come back. Does this guy come up to me and said, oh, you know, I'm sorry, I was a little abrasive before, but, you know, thanks for watching the fire while I was gone? Not one fucking word. Like, and I was thinking to myself, who is this guy? Is he like a military guy? Is he, why did he pick me to deputize and trust? Because I'm, you know, I mean, anyway, it was crazy. I was like, yeah. Next time I'm like, fuck it, no. Like, don't abandon. So what you're saying is you're going to abandon your fire.
You're like, I'll make sure my child does not.
Exactly. I'm keeping a good eye on my child. I don't care about any of your children.
Yeah, I had a little encounter, not nearly as dramatic as yours while I was there, but
is it another field trip story?
No, this is
I love the field trip stories.
This was
I almost ran off the road listening to the last one, so
yeah.
Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
So when I was there, it wasn't too packed, but there were enough people. There were like a couple ladies sitting in one of the benches in the gazebo. And then there were a couple, there were a lot of parents like hanging out on that big hill by the rolly slides.
Yes.
And then there were a couple people on those benches. I think we probably sat on the second bench, probably the bench next to where it sounds like you and Kelly were sitting. You know, near that like weird apple thing that spins.
Yes. That's what Trinity really liked, the apple thing.
Yeah, well, it turns out I like that, too, because my children liked the big rope thing. and this thing was so big that my youngest one, Emma, could not get started on it. Like, she needed help up.
Exactly.
To climb just, like, the first, and it's all wobbly and stuff. So, I don't know, my oldest one just climbed up like a monkey and went, like, started going all the way to the top. And so I was helping my youngest one because she wanted to join in. She was super, she started out super wobbly, but once she got to where the ropes were closer together, she also scrambled right up to the top, you know. And at first I'm like proud. I'm like, oh yeah, look at my little ones. They're so good and fearless. And then they're like, they go all the way to the top.
Yeah. And it's literally 30 feet or more off the ground.
Yeah. And this was not okay with me.
Well, exactly. You know, I was waiting to see one of these kids up at the top fall. And I was thinking, well, surely that maybe the way the ropes are, they'll most bounce all the way down or something like Plinko. But maybe they just drop right through and hit the ground.
Yeah.
Well, the other alternative is they get to the top and won't come down.
Well, Drew hasn't told the rest of his story yet.
Oh,
Yeah, no, it wasn't that bad. But also, like, there's no soft landing. It's just like AstroTurf on concrete at the bottom. So yeah, so I started to get a little agitated, and was like, I was trying to be cool, because you know you don't want to freak out your children. And they were calling my wife over because they wanted her to like take pictures of them while they were at the top. So my wife was standing near the thing, and I was sitting on the bench, and I was starting to get like all twitchy and itchy, and I was like,
"Was she cool with it?"
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was trying to hold it together, and they were up there, and they were just like playing. They were like kind of bouncing around on the ropes, and I was like, "No, nope."
Oh yeah.
Nope. So I got up, I went over to where my wife was standing, and I called up to them. I was trying to be very calm. I was like, okay, girls, it's time to come down now. And they're like, no, we like, I was like, no, it's time to come down. You've been up there long enough. Let's come down. And they're like, no. And then, my wife maybe was not reading the situation correctly.
Or she the way you desired.
Yeah. And she turned to me, and like when I realized like they were not going to be coming down, I was starting to walk away. I was like, okay, that's fine. Their mother's here. I cannot watch. I cannot watch. Yeah. This. So I'm like walking away, and my wife like says rather loudly, like, they're fine. I was like, I know they are. I'm not. And when I said that, the two ladies who were in the gazebo, they just started laughing at me.
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
And
I
that
like, no, I know who the OCD one is here, but I gotta walk away. I'm gonna go leave my fire unattended and go over to the parking lot.
Yeah, well, but I don't think that's OCD. I think that's just cautious.
Yeah, they eventually got bored after a couple more minutes, and they came down, and they were fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was like, we're never coming back here. It's like, again, it was sort of like the first field trip story. It was a situation where I think I was the only one who was bothered by anything.
Yeah, well.
we are definitely related.
Well, yeah, it's... I don't know, the whole parent thing too. It's tough because I realize that, you know, cause Journey is more of a scaredy cat for that kind of stuff than your kids are. Your kids are pretty bold about that kind of thing. So I want to encourage Journey to like do that kind of stuff, but don't want to give her a complex if she doesn't, you know. I don't want to be that angry dad who's like, just climb the rope, you know, soccer dad or something. So, but you know, it's like or even like she's pretty good about like making friends. She'll just walk up to people and make friends with them, which is not my style of living and never has been. So, you know, on one hand, I'm like, oh, don't. But the other hand, it's like, no, just let her do her thing. Be fine. They'll be fine. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kids are so. Empathetic. I mean, even if you don't say anything, they know when you're getting all tense and anxious, and
yeah,
that's the hardest to try. They
can see right. They can see right through to your crazy.
Oh yeah,
I know.
They live with it every day. They anticipate it.
That's the worst.
They are telling stories about your camshaft already.
Yeah, just like we knew when we were little kids what was going on, even though the parents were like, you guys didn't know what was going on. I was like, yes, we did. Yes, we did. We were abundantly aware.
Yeah. And comparing notes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I was like, you lost your shit when I dropped a bowl. You didn't think I knew what was going on?
Journey turns to me and she says, do you ever get the feeling like you're being watched? I'm like, yeah, you're always being watched. She's like, oh, wait, hold on. You always feel that feeling because you're not an only child. Well,
oh
yeah. Okay. It's fair enough. because she and my wife are only children. All right. Fine. Call me out.
Brutal.
Yeah. So anything else housekeeping-wise?
We are in the midst of preparing for our third camping weekend in a row.
Oh, exciting.
Oh, nice.
It's rough. I mean, the camping is fun, but the getting prepared for it and trying to keep the house from becoming a shambles at the same time with not having a weekend for the third weekend in a row is...
We're trying to unshambles our house. It's difficult.
Yeah.
And then I don't think I'm going to... I mean, starting... I think next week is my last week where I'm going to have consistent days off because we have to do this last training, which means I'm going to work a bunch of weekend days. And then we have Go Live. And I think after Go Live, I might be working like a week and a half in a row because people are going to need, like, for at least a week, everybody's going to have a Monday and come in and see this new computer system and freak out. So I got to be there to help people out and also fix shit that's going to break. And Joe... he has to go to MIDS and do all this. So he's got to work. He's got to work 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. for a month or whatever.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Send your feedback to show at notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.